Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Wild Hour virtual interview. The Wild is sponsored by the Wharton Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Wild Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Wharton. The Law Hour, an editorial review, is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and editorial review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on rebuilding the waste places when we come back. You know, we Americans may hold the dubious honor of being the most litigious people in the world, but when it comes to law, we seem to be among the most ignorant. Today, most Americans feel powerless to resist the evils that they see perpetrated against our liberties, privacy, and our property by these powerful government agencies, the multinational corporations, the lobbies, and the news media. But we don't have to remain helpless. The institution designed by God and incorporated into our Constitution and our Bill of Rights is called the judicial power. The courts are the proper repository for the protection of our rights, our liberties, and our property, not the Congress and not the political process. Now, did you know that the privilege against self-incrimination, for example, is neither accorded to the passive resistant nor to the person who is ignorant of his rights, not to someone who is indifferent thereto, because it's a fighting clause and its benefits can be retained only by sustained combat. It cannot be claimed by an attorney or solicitor. It is valid only when insisted upon by a belligerent claimant in person. So says U.S. versus Johnson. That's why I contend that we should listen more to the judges and less to the politicians and the lawyers. Now, did you hear what that judge said in that statement? He said, your rights cannot be claimed by an attorney or a solicitor. Your rights can only be claimed by you, the belligerent claimant in person. Now, if you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Be sure to ask for my free general law CD package while you're at it. Remember, that's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative. Best of all, it's free. Now, courtroom strategy and procedure, our school is available on compact disc for adult home education. Now, if you're online, you can go to the website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click on the email machine and send an email request for your free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. We're reviewing the Rebuilding the Waste Places, an article written by Franklin Sanders in the January 2006 Money Changer newsletter. If you'd like to subscribe or get a copy of this particular article, I think you can get one from the Money Changer. If you'll call them direct, it's 888-218-9226. Again, that's area code 888-218-9226. Remember, this is one of the newsletters that I cite from time to time, and I highly recommend it. Franklin Sanders began the article by making this observation, and I've been commenting on each one of these topics that he's raised. He said, maybe I'm just getting old and cynical, but today's America leaves me stone cold disgusted. It's a lot of noisy people yelling at each other without actually talking to each other or doing anything. Everybody knows something's wrong, that the wheels are coming off, and as Peggy Noonan wrote in a recent Wall Street Journal editorial, but all of their knowing and talking never changes anything. They just keep spewing out the same old worn-out rhetoric and cliches while making sure that they get their share before the wheels really do fall off. And as I mentioned last time, every one of us knows that the wheels are about to come off of the great American experiment, the great American empire. And like Rome of old and Egypt and Babylonian and Sparta and Athens and Greece and so on, all of these former empires, these great world-ruling empires, have all decayed and collapsed. They're not here anymore. And the Germans during World War II thought that they were going to create this great utopian worldwide empire. And when it was all said and done, they were just a smoldering ruin and an occupied nation. You know, in the final analysis. Americans today evidently believe that America is going to lead the world into this new world order, this great utopian wonderland where everybody just has everything. Or at least Americans have everything, and the rest of the world can work for us. I guess that's what they have in mind. But when we take a look at the fabric of America, you take a look at our economy, you take a look at the social fabric of the country. Everything that Franklin Sanders is talking about here, he said the war against Christianity is causing America to die. The right to life is causing America to die. The right to property is causing America to die. The right to freedom is causing America to die. And he had a good argument with each and every one of them. I made my comments, and now we're up to the right to honest money. He says, if I can create money out of thin air, eventually I will own all of the property in the country. You can never compete with me because you have to work for your money, and I, by legal privilege, closed to you, create out of nothing as much money as I want. Now, as long as we have no money with an independent value, no gold and silver money, and as long as some people can create money out of thin air and by law force the rest of us to accept it, we will be the slaves and serfs of those who create the money, namely the banking system and the Federal Reserve. Without restoring the right to gold and silver money, there can be no reformation in this country. Well, at first blush, I would say, hey, right on, Franklin. I'm with you there. But as I analyze the statement, I have to say, as I did a little earlier about the war on Christianity, I'm really not so sure that there's a real war going on over government and Christian values and beliefs. I pointed that out to you, I think, in the first program. But now, let's take a look at honest money. He says, I'm going to analyze this now. Now, listen to what's being said here. If I can create money out of thin air, eventually I will own all of the property in the country. Well, that's the way it's been working, but I'm not really sure that that's the case. Remember, we have some laws called thou shalt not steal, and thou shalt not commit adultery, and you shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. I'm a firm believer in the law of God. I don't believe that the banks can take away from me that which God Almighty Himself has given me. I think that if they're going to take away from me my property, they have to do it by another vein, another tactic. Let me explain it. In 1941, the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor. That day that President Roosevelt said would become a day in infamy was in fact the death knell of the Japanese Empire. And you know, the reason why is because of a contract that was written about 3,000 years prior to that event. A contract written with a guy named Abraham, with the Creator, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. That contract, the Abrahamic Covenant. There was a second covenant, a second contract that reinforced that first contract. It was the covenant that God made with Jacob. And then there was a third contract, one that really spells it out in spades, where we got the Ten Commandments. And that was the covenant that was given to our people, about 3.5 million of us, through Moses at Mount Sinai. And when the covenant, when the contract was ratified, it's in Exodus 24, verse 7. You can read it for yourself, where when God completed the offer, the tender offer, the people said, all that the Eternal has said, we will do and be obedient. Now you're sitting there saying, what's that got to do with Pearl Harbor? Well, just this. One of the benefits, one of 33 benefits that are articulated in Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28, God said, your enemies will flee from before you seven ways. Let me read it to you. And when the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor, they triggered this contract's operational clause. Listen to this. In Leviticus 26, he said, 5 of you shall chase 100, 100 of you shall put 10,000 to flight, and your enemy shall fall before you by the sword, because I will have respect unto you, and make you fruitful, and multiply you, and establish my covenant with you. We Israelites have a contract with our God. And that contract is like an Achilles heel. It's like a sword of Damocles. It's a sword that's sharpened on both edges, and it cuts both ways. It's a killer. This contract that we have with our God is a killer. It's a killer to our enemies because when an enemy attacks us, our God has a duty under the terms and conditions of the contract to defend us. And he did, and he destroyed the Japanese Empire. But the sword's sharp on the other side, and the requirement that we have to fulfill in order to get God to destroy our enemies is we have to obey God and keep his commandments. It says so right here, Leviticus 26. Verse 3 says, if you walk in my statutes and keep my commandments and do them, then I will. And he goes on and he gives you a series of, here's what I will do for you. But the qualifier is, if you obey me and keep my commandments, I will do these things. And one of the things that he said he would do, he says, I'll give peace in the land. You shall lie down, and none shall make you afraid. I will rid evil beasts out of the land, and neither shall the sword go through your land. You shall chase your enemies, and they shall fall before you by the sword. Now, during World War II, Americans, at least, you know, all around me, I lived on the West Coast. I lived in a little place called Corbell, California, Eureka, California, on the Pacific Ocean. And people were afraid that the Japanese were going to invade. They didn't have anything to fear at all. Nothing. Zero. Zilch. It said very plainly. You know, the people in England were sitting there saying, well, we think that the Germans are going to invade England, and I'm sure they had every intention of doing that. But you'll notice they didn't get the job done. They could invade France. They could invade Denmark. They could invade Norway, but they could not invade the United States, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, or the United States. They couldn't invade Great Britain. Isn't that just kind of funny? And that's because of this contract I'm telling you about. Now, in our contract terms that Franklin Sanders is complaining about here, when he says the right to honest money, do you know that one of the contract terms for us is that we practice just weights and balances and that we practice thou shalt not steal, the Eighth Commandment? And when we adopted in this country, and you Canadians and Australians and New Zealanders and you Englishmen over there have all followed in this same criminal behavior here on thou shalt not steal, you created a central bank. And because of that central bank, we now have unjust weights and balances, and we're stealing from one another. And this has caused us to go into an $8 trillion national debt here in the United States, and you Canadians have the same problem. You've got inflation. You've got fiat paper currency. And that's what Franklin Sanders is complaining about. But concomitant with that paper currency in Australia, New Zealand, Canada, and the United States, we have gold and silver coin. Did you know that? Here in the United States in 1986, thanks to a representative by the name of Ron Paul down in Texas, who put a rider on a bill. It was called the Tax Reform Act of 1986. And it called for establishing a mint to reproduce or recreate our gold coinage here in the United States, gold and silver coinage. We Americans have at our disposal, and so do you Canadians and Australians, you have $50 gold pieces, 1 ounce gold coins, you have half ounce, quarter ounce, and 1/10 ounce gold coins. We have a dual monetary system. Franklin Sanders is very well aware of this dual monetary system. Now, when Mr. Sanders says, if I can create money out of thin air, eventually I will own all of the property in the country. If you participate in the paper money system, that's a true statement. But if you don't participate in the paper money system, if you would avail yourselves of and obey God and keep His commandments and practice the gold and silver that's available to all of us, that won't happen to you. In the next sentence, he says, you can never compete with me because you have to work for your money, and I, by legal privilege closed to you, create out of nothing as much money as I want. Hey, he's not lying to you. And all the people who participate in the paper money system are like flies on flypaper. I mean, they're just trapped. Now, you don't have to be trapped on the flypaper. You don't have to participate in the paper money system. There's another system there. You may not know how to use it. You may not be aware of it. And you may not have had anybody instruct you in it. But don't ever come up in the judgment now and say to God, well, I used Federal Reserve notes because I didn't have any choice. Boys and girls, if there's one thing the bankers hate, it's gold and silver coin. We don't have gold and silver coin in the United States, Canada, and Australia because the bankers wanted to give it to us. We got it in spite of the bankers because God Almighty Himself has decreed it. So don't sit there now and say, well, I just have to have credit cards and checking accounts, and well, I just don't have any choice, you know. Oh, yeah, you got choices out there, boys and girls. You've got choices to make. Franklin goes on, he says, as long as we have no money with an independent value, no gold and silver money, and as long as some people can create money out of thin air and by law force the rest of us to accept it, we will be the slaves and serfs of those who create the money, namely the banking system and the Federal Reserve. Hey, that's true. I agree with that statement. Well, to a point. Let me underline a couple of statements here. As long as we have no money with an independent value. But Mr. Sanders, we do have money with an independent value. And you sell it to your customers every day. You have been advocating. You have been preaching to the choir for as long as I've known you. You yourself distribute. You yourself are an honest money broker. You are, in fact, a banker. You are a banker to those of us who use gold and silver coin. Where on earth do you think I get my gold and silver coin? From Bank of America or J.P. Morgan? Don't I get it from you, Mr. Sanders? Don't I get it from Charlie and Frank, the gold brokers? Well, boys and girls, if little Georgie Gordon can get gold and silver, if little Georgie Gordon can conduct his business in gold and silver, if I can practice the Eighth Commandment, if I can practice the statutes that say you shall not have an unjust weight or balance in your bag, I find it hard to believe that 300 million Americans out there can't do what I do. Well, Mr. Sanders goes on, he says, as long as some people can create money out of thin air by law, force the rest of us to accept it. Boys and girls, I'm an old man pushing 70. I'm almost reached 70. I'm knocking on the door. Not one time in 70 years that I can recall anybody has ever forced a Federal Reserve note on me against my will or over my objection. I've never had that happen to me. Now, I have accepted a lot of Fed notes. I've used a lot of credit cards and written a lot of checks. I've stolen a lot of money, stolen a lot of real wealth by using these unjust weights and balances in my lifetime. And then one day I woke up, somebody explained this gold and silver thing to me in the Eighth Commandment, and I said, well, God, that makes me kind of a criminal over here. And Mr. Sanders says, we will be the slaves and serfs of those who create the money. Let me tell you a little parable here. Boys and girls, gold is the currency of kings. And those that deal in gold become kings. And that's why gold is the currency of kings. Silver is the currency of gentlemen. People who deal in silver are, in fact, gentlemen. Barter is the currency of peasants. And debt is the currency of slaves. Now, boys and girls, back in 1930, we Americans had a national system, a dual system, of paper money and gold. And we elected a guy by the name of Franklin D. Roosevelt. And Mr. Roosevelt, our presidente, decided that what we needed to practice was the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. And under his regime, from 1933 to about 1945, we got to get into the Social Security system, which was the 8th plank to the Communist Manifesto. And while he did not create the Federal Reserve System, the policies created during the New Deal certainly aided and abetted the Federal Reserve System by taking our gold under House Joint Resolution 192. And then under the Roosevelt administration, they jacked up the income tax rates from 60% to 91%. Franklin Roosevelt did everything that he could to place America into and practicing the 10 planks of the Communist Manifesto and to take away from us gold and silver, to take away from us the 8th Commandment, to take away from us the 10 Commandments, as a matter of fact. And I can't remember, I can't think of anything that anybody was doing back in those days that would have slowed it down or stopped it. In fact, Franklin Roosevelt is still looked upon today as a savior, as a great president, on a par with George Washington and Abraham Lincoln. Now, boys and girls, we had a choice to make, and we made the choice. We chose paper money over gold. And when gold came back in 1986, the last time I saw, 5% of Americans deal in gold and silver. 95% of Americans deal in fiat paper money. And boys and girls, it's a choice that you have to make, and you've made it. Now, the banks are not taking my property, and I'm not concerned about the banks taking my property. I believe that as long as I obey God and keep His commandments, if it's necessary, I'm not even sure that this will be necessary, but let me give you a couple of examples. Do you remember Daniel in the lion's den? Daniel lion's den. You probably heard about this when you were a little kid in Sunday school. And you'll find this Daniel in the lion's den story in Daniel chapter 6. It'll take you 15 minutes to read it. Well, maybe half an hour if you've been to public school. Take a half an hour and go read Daniel chapter 6. It's in pretty plain English, quite a little story. Daniel was the only man in the Babylonian Empire. Now, there might have been a half dozen or a dozen others, but as far as the story is concerned, this is the last guy in the empire who obeys God and keeps his commandments. And some of his political adversaries, probably Democrats, all of them, decided that what they needed to do was to get rid of this political adversary, and so they went to the king and they had some legislation enacted. And in the legislation, it said something to effect that if you're out here caught praying, you know, to some other foreign and alien god over here, you should suffer the death penalty. Now, you would have thought that Daniel, praying to this strange and foreign god called the God of Abraham, you know, would have kept it kind of under wraps, closed his windows, and gone into his closet to pray. He didn't. He opened his windows and prayed openly to the God of Abraham. In other words, he gave everybody the finger. He just opened the door, gave him the finger, and said, watch this. And he prayed to this foreign and alien god. Well, sure enough, they saw him do that, and they arrested him. And I'm sure that they gave him a fair trial, you know, something on the order of Saddam Hussein. He got a fair trial, and they found him guilty, sentenced him to death, and the death penalty in that society was, we're going to throw you into the lion's den. And so they did. They threw Daniel into the lion's den. And there was an angel in there. I know who that angel was. His name is Michael. It was Big Mike. And Big Mike kept the angels from eating Daniel. Next day, the king comes over, and he says, hey, Dan, are you still alive down there? Dan says, oh, king, live forever. And he said, yeah, the angel of the eternal has saved my life. And the king said, well, come on out of there. And the king said, you know, this is like a trial by fire. Now, if those lions didn't eat you, then it must be that you were innocent. And therefore, those that accused you must have dealt with you falsely. Now, there's a ninth commandment that says, thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor. Do you know what the penalty is for bearing false witness against your neighbor? It's a very unusual penalty. It isn't death by stoning. It isn't you get your right hand cut off. It isn't 200 hours of community service or 5 years probation. Here's what it is. If you come in and testify against somebody falsely, whatever it was that you thought to do with your testimony against the person that you were testifying against will be done to you. And so these people that had come in and testified against Daniel had it in their mind that they would have Daniel thrown into the lion's den. And they did. And when the lions didn't eat Daniel, then it was pretty obvious that some god somewhere, now we don't know if it was Marduk or Moloch or if it was the god of Abraham, but some god, maybe it was Allah, maybe it was Buddha, you know, who knows, the great spirit. But you know, the king was sitting there saying, hey, something very unusual is going on here. And so they took these guys and they threw them into the lion's den. And the report says that the lions tore them asunder, ate them up, and ate their bones. Now, most people today, when they read that story, see, they don't believe it because, you see, lions don't eat bones. Hyenas do. Jackals do. Dogs gnaw on them. Lions don't. Lions don't eat bones. But in this case, the lions ate their bones. Now, I just thought I'd throw that out there for you. Because when you obey God and keep His commandments, and somebody comes against you like the Japanese, under the terms of our contract with our God, Big Mike will come and he will protect you. And that's the law. That's the terms of the contract. That's what a contract is. It's law. Now, we Americans are involved in a contract with a foreign and alien God called the United States of America and Tennessee and Missouri and California and Wyoming. And we have violated the first commandment that says you shall have no other gods before me. And the primary contract that everybody in America has is a birth certificate. That's your first contract with the state. Then it doesn't take very long until they give you a second contract with this foreign and alien god called Social Security. And then by the time you get to be a big kid over here, you have another contract with a foreign and alien god called the state. And they register you for public school in violation of the education statutes here in the scripture. And then before long, you get to be a big kid and you want a driver's license. And then you want to get married and you go get a marriage license. And then pretty soon you have children and you go get some birth certificates. And you know, then you want to work for the government, and so you go sign another contract and become a highway patrolman, or you become some kind of a government employee. And these contracts are prohibited. Did you know that? Yeah, there's four statutes in the scripture that tell you not to make any covenants or any contracts with these foreign and alien gods. And if you do, they'll surely be a snare to you. Just thought I'd share that with you. Because without restoring the right to gold and silver money, there can be no reformation in this country. You know, Mr. Sanders, I couldn't agree with you more. But I disagree in that the Federal Reserve over here has power over me. I don't have to participate in the Federal Reserve. I don't have to make contracts with a foreign and alien god. I don't have to participate in this fiat paper money, and I don't. You know, as a matter of fact, Mr. Sanders, you don't either. Now, I happen to know that you deal in gold and silver coin. And I think that as long as you deal in gold and silver coin, you know, you'll be blessed, and I don't think you're going to have a problem in the world. But you know, people that have their money in the bank and in stocks and bonds and all kinds of mortgages and debt instruments and pay usury and interest, I think those people are going to have some real problems, and in pretty short order. So there's my story. That's what I think about the right to honest money. We've already got it. We just need to use it. I got to take a little break here, boys and girls. It's halfway time. I got to remind you that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly and has our radio log schedule and archives. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Now, to order yours, just call the Law School direct at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse or recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate. And that's because most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily 100% endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, remember our website, georgegordon.org, or call us direct, 417-273-4967. Back to Building the Waste Places. An article, the lead article, Rebuilding the Waste Places by Franklin Sanders in the January 2006 Money Changer newsletter. I got to tell you that when Mr. Sanders says they just keep spewing the same worn-out rhetoric and cliches while making sure they get their share before the wheels really fall off. God, I couldn't agree more. He says it's a lot of noisy people in America yelling at each other without actually talking to each other or doing anything. So I thought I'd take this opportunity to talk to you about this, and then let's do something about it. Let me share this with you. In America, in 1787, we were 13 backward third world countries. 13 backward third world countries that joined together under a constitution and sound money with 22 principles of the Ten Commandments contained in that written instrument called the Federal Constitution or the Constitution of the United States. 22 principles of the Ten Commandments are contained in our federal constitution. And you Canadians, Australians, and New Zealanders, and Englishmen also have principles of that law contained in your founding documents also. Isn't that just real special? And we didn't get that from Karl Marx. We got that from Moses. Now, we Anglo-Saxons have always had a love-hate relationship with our God. As a matter of fact, as a general rule, we hate that sucker. I mean, we just absolutely loathe our God. Now, you don't find the Muslims hating their gods and their prophets. In fact, they venerate, revere their prophet Muhammad and their god Allah. And so do the Buddhists, and so do most of the other people in the world, not us. Now, there's an Achilles heel that I mentioned to you here just a little earlier. I said this is a sharp two-edged sword. We got a covenant. We got a contract with our God. And when the Japanese attacked us, boy, that was the kiss of death for those poor people. They didn't know what they were getting into. The other side of that sword is, when we don't obey our God and keep His commandments, then the balance of Leviticus 26 comes into play. That's the bad news. And that starts in verse 14. And he says, if you don't obey me, if you don't keep my commandments, the wheels are going to come off your toys. Listen to this. He says, but if you will not hearken unto me, if you will not do all of these commandments, and if you despise my statutes, or if your soul abhors my judgment, so that you will not do all of my commandments, but that you break my covenant, I also will do this unto you. Now, boys and girls, I'm telling you, it's time to bend over. Grease her up real good, because here it comes. Now, what you see going on over here in Iran, in Iraq, in Afghanistan, is the tip of an iceberg that's going to sink our ship. And what's coming down the pike here isn't good. Franklin Sanders is telling you, hey, listen, boys and girls, there's some bad problems here. And I couldn't agree more. He says, we got a right to own guns. Here's what he has to say about guns and gun ownership. He says, I won't be coy. The man who can't defend himself from thief or government is not free. The right to own weapons is not about hunting, collecting, shooting, or anything else. The right to own weapons is the bottom line of freedom, the palladium of liberty, the sine qua non of a free society, the standing warning to tyrants that we will fight back, and fight back effectively. Once they take away your right to own guns, once they begin to regulate that right, you're no longer free. Any renovation that does not include full freedom to own the weapon of your choice is a sham. I'm going to underline the right to own guns. Now, we Americans have the right to own guns. I think you Australians have lost yours. In Canada, I think you've lost yours also, if I remember right. I'm not 100% certain. And here in America, we're going to lose ours. So I just wanted to tell you up front. We're being disarmed. We're being disarmed by our false god government. Remember, First Commandment says, you shall have no other gods before me. And we said, no, God, you got that wrong. We're going to create our own god. We've got a god in Washington, D.C. We're going to elect our own president. And you'll see this in 1 Samuel chapter 8. We gave our God the finger and said, we want a king like all the nations around us. And our God said, you know, that's going to be a bad mistake. Bad mistake. You don't want to do that. I got to tell you the story because I think it's so apropos. And I want to tell you that we made a mistake way back here about 3,000 years ago, and we have compounded that mistake. Now, programs like this one come on the air, and I'm not the only voice in the wilderness over here. There's a lot of other people writing newsletters, you know, like Bob Chapman and Franklin Sanders. And then there's George Gordon, and there's Alex Jones, and there's all these people out here that are beating the gong and telling you people about the wheels coming off of the American empire. Now, let me tell you a story here. The basic underlying theory behind all of these warnings and all of these radio talk shows and all of this talk that's going on that Franklin Sanders so aptly pointed out, I gotta read this to you again. He says it's a lot of noisy people yelling at each other without actually talking to each other or doing anything. The theory seems to be that if we can inform the American public, the American voter in great righteous indignation will throw the bad guys out and vote the good guys in. Now that seems to be the theory. And I want to tell you, boys and girls, that as an old man who's been watching this for the last 50 years, I can tell you it ain't worked yet. What makes you think it's going to work in the next 50? Yeah, I'm telling you that over the past 50 years, you have not voted the bad guys out. In fact, the other night, I think I told you this the other day, if I didn't, I'm going to repeat myself, but bear with me because, you know, you get to be old and your Alzheimer's starts kicking in, but I watched Now the other day, and on Now, they had a little thing called Earmarks was the name of the story. You ought to go to PBS and go to that Now program and pay the $19.95 and get that story because it'll just open your eyeballs like you haven't had them open for a long time. These earmarks are bribes that are given by the executive branch of government or other members of Congress to buy the votes of the members. It can be lobbyists. It can be the president, as in the case of CAFTA. It can be other members of the Congress who want your vote for their own special pork. It costs you $27 billion a year. Your Congress is totally out of control. It is totally bought and paid for. If it isn't bought and paid for by the pharmaceutical corporations, then it's bought and paid for by their members of Congress or bought and paid for by the president. Bottom line. 98% of the incumbents are elected every election. That's what happened in the last election. It's been up around 90% for as long as I can remember. Incumbents buy their way back in. Now, it's against the law to take a bribe. Did you know that? Against the law to take a bribe. And God has a statute against bribery. And he said, don't do that. Don't do this bribery thing. So, see if I can find it here for you. Maybe I can't find it. Yep, here it is. Gifts, bribes, and rewards. Let me tell you the story. In Exodus 23, verse 8, God warned us. He said, he gave us a statute. He says, you shall take no gift, for the gift blindeth the wise and perverteth the words of righteousness. Deuteronomy 10, verse 17 says, for the eternal your God is a God of gods and a Lord of lords, a great God, a mighty and a terrible, which regardeth not persons, nor taketh reward. This guy can't be bribed. Deuteronomy 16, verses 18 through 20. He says, judges and officers shall you make in all of your gates, which the eternal your God gives you, throughout your tribes, and they shall judge the people with just judgment. You shall not wrest judgment. You shall not respect persons, neither take a gift, for a gift doth blind the eyes of the wise and pervert the words of the righteous. That which is altogether just shall you follow, that you may live and inherit the land which the eternal your God gives you. All right. Now, most of you people listening to me right now are voters, and certainly most of the other people out there, of the 300 million Americans in this country, are voters. You voted Bill Clinton into office, boys and girls. You voted George Bush into office, boys and girls. You vote for these senators and representatives. It's your process. It's democracy. And don't ever think that you got democracy out of the Bible. Democracy doesn't come from the Bible. And the democratic process is not biblical. God is a king. He just told you, I'm King of kings and Lord of lords. I'm the God of gods. This guy doesn't run for election. And you can rest assured that when Jesus comes back, he's not asking for your vote. He said, every knee will bow to me, and if you don't bow voluntarily, I'll break your damn legs. Now, this voting thing over here, you got that from George Bush. This concept of democracy was hated and reviled by our founding fathers. They had nothing to do with democracy in the United States Constitution. This is a republic, boys and girls. Far cry from democracy. Now, we Americans have adopted democracy like we invented the stuff. In fact, we want to export it. We want to give it. We want to give this democracy to the Iraqis and the Iranians. I want to point out that the Iranians have voted in that government that they've got over there that we're about to go destroy. And down in Venezuela, you know, those people voted in that democracy down there through the same system that we're advocating worldwide that we're going down to Venezuela and destroy. And you know, those Hamas guys were elected in democratic elections over there, boys and girls. That's democracy. I didn't come here to tell you to go vote for this or that, but here's what I'm here to tell you, that you people who want the right to keep and bear arms, you people that want the right to honest money, you people that want the right to freedom and the end of this war on Christianity, you're all voters. You voted for this. Now, either you people don't know how to vote, or you're voting for the wrong people, or perhaps you're voting for the right people. These are the people that you want. And therefore, the gun restrictions and the dishonest money and the war on Christianity and the right to life and this right to freedom that you're talking about over here is the just rewards that you deserve because of the way you've been voting. Now, I want to tell you, I don't vote because I'm a monarchist. And that's politically incorrect here in America. You tell somebody that you're a monarchist, but you know, the God of Abraham is a monarch. This guy's a king. He works kind of like my daddy. I was 11 years old. I can tell you this little story. I was going to run away from home. I was 11 years old. I was tired of my daddy. He was a dictator. He was a damn tyrant. My dad, a tyrant, a Hitler, a Joe Stalin, a Genghis Khan. That was my dad. Just ask me. I'll tell you. My dad insisted that I take the garbage out every day. He was an old army guy, you know, I guess he must have learned that in the army. Can you believe that a parent would impair, threaten, command, demand, force a 12-year-old kid to take the garbage out? And not just take it out, you know, once a week or twice a month, every day. That's the kind of tyranny I lived under. I'd change my underwear every day, too. My dad required me to change my underwear every day. I guess he was afraid I might get run over by a car and they'd see my dirty underwear in the hospital. Anyway, that was, and make my bed and mow the grass. I'm telling you, I lived in a tyranny that I couldn't wait to get away from. And I was 11 years old and I wanted to get the hell out of there. So I announced to my dad that I was going to run away from home. And I guess he was a little surprised. I don't remember exactly how surprised he was, but he did say this to me. He said, where do you want to run away to? And I hadn't thought about it very much and I didn't know. I knew I wanted to get away. I knew I hated it there, and I knew I wanted to run away to someplace, but I didn't know where. And he said, have you got a suitcase? And I said, no, I don't have a suitcase. He got up off the couch, and he said, well, let me get you one of mine. And he went out to the garage. He's gone about 2 or 3 minutes. He came back with this great big blue metal box. I mean, this is about a 1913 model steamer trunk. I mean, this thing, you know, it's got one strap on it. You can carry it in one hand. It's not one of them big trunks, you know, but it's a great big suitcase. And he took that into my bedroom. I was an only child, and so I had my own bedroom. Can you believe that? I'm 11 years old, got my own room. And he put that on the bed, and he said, now, what do you want to take with you? I'm 11 years old. Now, that I did know. And I had the answer to that. I said, I'll take my electric train, Tonka toys, a record set. And my dad looked at me. I can just see it right now. It was kind of pathetic. He looked at me kind of with, I can't believe that this is my kid. Kind of a look, you know, he said, son, where you're going out there on the sidewalk, there's no electricity. Don't you think you'd be better advised to take coats and pants and shirts and socks and shoes and things you can use out on the sidewalk? And then when you get to wherever it is that you want to go, I'll forward your electric train and Tonka toys and a record set and stuff. And so I thought about that for a second. And I thought, well, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I said, yeah, okay, I better take my clothes. And so my dad opened the top drawer of my dresser and he took everything in there out and he put it in the suitcase, and he went to the second drawer and the third drawer. He took everything out, put it in the suitcase. Hell, it wasn't half full. I mean, how many clothes does an 11-year-old kid have? Two pairs of Levi's, three shirts, six pairs of underwear, six T-shirts, one coat, pair of shoes. He said, "How much money you got?" I said, $20. And he said, "That's not near enough." He reached in his wallet and he pulled out $20 and he threw that on top of the suitcase. He says, "Now you got $40." He says, "Where do you want me to take you? Train station, bus station? Didn't have airplanes in those days, so it was just Greyhound bus or the railroad. I didn't know." 11 years old, I didn't know. So he said, well, let me suggest the Vance Hotel. You can stay at the Vance Hotel for $5 a day. It's the cheapest place in town, and that's $35 for a week. And you'll have $5 left over. You can buy one meal a day, ham and eggs for breakfast. Five meals in the week. And you know, boys and girls, at age 11, I looked at that problem. I hated it at home. I wanted to get the hell out of there. It was total tyranny. And I recognized my basic problem. I don't have enough money to escape this tyranny. I don't have the wherewithal to get out of here. So I said to him, well, maybe I won't run away just yet. And my dad said to me, he said, you know, that's the most sense you've made in this whole conversation. So he announced to me that he was King Edward and that my mother was Queen Mildred and that I was Little Georgie the Serf. And my dad said, I'm the king and I make the laws and your mother executes the laws and you sit down, shut up and do what you're told or it's going to hurt real bad. He told me a little bit further, he says, I'm going to go out and I'm going to make the money and I'm going to bring it back and buy the bacon and your mother's going to cook it and you're going to eat it, but you're going to do your share around here. There's certain things you're going to do. It's the way life is. Certain things you're going to do. And if you don't, it's going to hurt real bad. Well, I finally got away from there. I got out of that tyranny when I was age 13. I was almost 14. I left in May and I turned 14 in July. And I got a job working for a guy at $50 a month, feeding his chickens, taking out his garbage. Mrs. Harvey insisted that I make my bed and that I put my clothes in the clothes hamper and I had to go out and feed the chickens and mow the grass, but I was doing it for somebody else and I got paid $50 a month. And I woke up one day and I said, you know, that tyranny of my dad's wasn't near as bad as I thought it was. And that's the point that I want to make. And that, boys and girls, that there's a real world out there, and whether you like it or not, there's rules out there you got to follow. And the rules that our God set down aren't near as bad as we thought they were. But these rules that are being set down by President Bush in the Patriot Act, and by Barbara Boxer, and Senator Ted Kennedy on this gun legislation and regulations, and that Alan Greenspan has given us with this fiat paper currency are killers, and the wheels are coming off, boys and girls. And next time, we're going to turn over here when we start off, next time on 1 Samuel chapter 8. And I want to tell you over here that about 3,000 years ago, we had the same problem with our God that I just described for you that I had with my dad. They said, we're living in this tyranny and we've got to get out of here. We want a king like all the nations around us. And so God warned them, you know, he said, now listen, boys and girls, just like my daddy did. He said, now listen, sonny, you've got your head up the wrong end of your anatomy. This isn't going to come out very well for you. And Franklin Sanders is complaining about how this has come out for us. Since we rejected the Ten Commandments and we adopted the Federal Reserve, since we adopted democracy and threw away our republic, since we voted for what we wanted, and we got our Franklin D. Roosevelt, our savior, the wheels are coming off. Now, tuck that one away in your heart, and we'll be back next time with more on this subject of building the waste places on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, you've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.